welcome to Shattering Myths. This is Larry. I'm sitting in for Yada, who's on a well-deserved vacation. And Scott is co-hosting. How are you doing, Scott?
I did not get the vacation.
You didn't get the vacation? It's a wonder I could even spell vacation. I probably can. You know, it's been a while since I've had one.
Well, if you spot me a couple letters.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. I thought today, you know, I would point out some obvious things and just kind of work our way through a history of corruption. And, you know, these things are obvious for those of us who have seriously looked at the work as opposed to following religious tradition. But I'm doing this today in hopes there are some people listening that are involved in religious tradition, and they might reconsider, you know, their position. And I wanted to start here with a line out of a passage out of Revelation 18:4. And it's, of course, it was written by Yao Kanan 36 or 37 years. I'm not sure if it was 68 CE or 69 CE. But Yao Kanan, speaking of the whore of Babylon, says, "Come out of her, my people, so that you do not participate in her sins, and so that you don't receive her plagues." Now, at the time Yao Kanan wrote that, Babylon hadn't been around for over 500 years. And that being the case, why do you suppose he wrote that, Scott?
Because of Paul?
because people were participating.
Yeah.
In Babylonian religious concepts. And he knew they would be right up to the end, and that's why he wrote it right up to the end. Those things would entail things like using the names of pagan gods and goddesses. It would entail Sunday worship of a lord. They packed around crosses. You know, the cross is the oldest satanic sign.
Sounds familiar to today. There's a lot of people that walk around with crosses on their, painted onto their bodies, on their arms as tattoos and things. I would say probably 90% of the people I know have a necklace that has a cross on it and things like that.
Yeah, they're hanging in churches, aren't they? They're all over church walls, everything else. You know, the thing about the cross is that that wasn't a symbol that Yahweh used. It was a symbol that they decided to adopt when they created the universal church. And what they did, there was a upright pole or upright pillar, and when it was actually written out, it was straios, meaning upright pole, in Greek. They just copy-edited in cross. And that's one of the oldest satanic signs in the world, because you have, you know, as an example, the Egyptian Ankh, you know, the Druid swastika, the Roman Chiario. Those are all crosses. I want to read something here out of Yasha Yahu. He says this. Yahweh says this. He says, "Without money or cost," he says, "listen to me carefully. Incline your ear. Come to me. Listen so that you may live, so that you may be able to establish an everlasting covenant relationship. A relationship, however, does require more than one person's participation." In other words, you couldn't hope to have a relationship with somebody if all you did was talk at them, which is basically what prayer has become today. People talking at Yahweh. Of course, they're talking to the Lord. They're not talking to him. But, you know, it's obviously something that is given. You know, there's no money or cost, and the reason there's no cost is because Yahweh paid the cost. You know, he just wants us to rely on him. Now, I'm going to read a couple phrases, and I want to know if you know where they come from. Okay, Scott?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. It says here, I committed a sin in humbling myself because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge.
That sounds a lot like Paul.
You're right.
That sounds a lot like Paul, yeah.
Okay. And then that's Corinthians 11:7, and then in 11:8 he says, I robbed other churches taking wages to serve you.
That's Paul.
That's astounding.
Well, right now he's an arrogant thief.
Yeah, yeah. I committed a sin humbling myself because I preached the, quote, gospel of God to you. Gospel comes from God's spell. And the gospel of grace is God's spell of gratia. Those are literally, those are the three underworld goddesses associated with the charities or the charis. And, you know, that would be funny. You know, can you imagine being so full of yourself that you think, or even worse, that you'd write, you might be committing a sin being humble, or that you should have charged for, you know, sharing a stream of nonsense at people. I mean, and while it should be obvious, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that Yahusha was not here to invent a God's spell. He was here actually fulfilling the heart of the Torah, which were the Moed Mikra, the plan that Yahweh had all along. And I just find it very bizarre that anybody buys into it. Here's another one. I want to read this to you, and you tell me what you think. Now, first, Yahweh says this. In Matanyah, Yahusha is saying this, and do not call anyone on earth father, for you have one father. He is in heaven. That's Matanyah 23:9. Now, guess who this is? I became your father in Yahusha Messiah through the gospel. I encourage you then to be imitators of me. Who do you suppose that is, Scott?
Man, I think it's Paul again. It sounds like Paul. It's got to be Paul. Final answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's try this one. Now, this is in Hosea, he says, Hosea 8:4. They have set up rulers and kings, but not by me. They have appointed governors and put leaders in positions of authority, whom I do not know. Then in Psalms 119:161, Yahweh goes on to say, those holding high office pursue me in vain, without cause, for nothing. For from your words, their hearts tremble in fear. Now, well, this is actually Dod talking, but he's talking about the words of Yahweh. For from your words, their hearts tremble in fear. And that's Mizmor, or the song, or what we call Psalms today, 119:161. I want to repeat Hosea one more time. They've set up rulers and kings, but not by me. They have appointed governors and put leaders in positions of authority, whom I do not know. Now, I want to read this. Let every being be in submission to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from Elohim, and the authorities that exist are appointed by Elohim. Take a shot. Who do you think wrote that?
Man, it's got to be Paul again. Sounds a lot like Paul. It seems like something he would say.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about a guy that claims to speak for Yahweh, and he's in opposition to Yahweh. And by the way, when Yahweh says, you know, they set up kings and rulers not by me, he says he doesn't even know them. So the religious tradition that Yahweh is omnipresent and knows everybody and is just standing there with everybody in every position waiting for them, dying to have a relationship with them, isn't true. He doesn't even know these people. You know, if I spent 24 hours a day with you, Scott, and we ate the same food and we drank the same beverages and had the same coffee and watched the same sporting programs and studied the same material day in and day out for just say 10 years. Do you think we would know each other by then?
I think we would get to know each other, yeah. Yeah. I would probably even know your name, even.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet Yahweh says these people don't even know him. He says they actually tremble in fear of his words. You know, and I believe that because they don't know him. And they certainly weren't established by him. Excuse me. They were established.
Well, think about that, too.
Because people make poor choices. Go ahead.
Think about that, too. Would you put anybody, again, would you, let's just say me and you just met, would you put me in charge of your stuff right out the bat before knowing me? Or would you get to know me and then say, all right, this guy has his stuff together, I'll put him in charge?
Yeah, I think I'd probably get to know you.
So would everybody else. Except for Paul.
And those who've decided to follow him, you know. And there's also this mindset out there, well, if you only had the Jewish mindset, you would understand Paulos. His name was really Paulos. And it, by the way, it means he who is lowly and little. So when I think of somebody like, say, Eliyah or Zachariah or Yashayahu or Matanyah or Yaokanan, you know, all these, they all have Yah's name or title in them, and then all of a sudden, here's a guy that speaks in direct opposition, and his name is he who is lowly and little. Now, Yahweh puts a lot of oomph in a name. Can you imagine him naming somebody who speaks for him, he who is lowly and little?
Not a chance.
This is Larry and Scott. We're back for another segment of Shattering Myths. You know, and there was a fellow named Luke, and you know, you'll get a lot of people that quote Luke to prove Paul, but, you know, Luke, all he had was hearsay from Paul because he was just Paul's historian. Luke was really nowhere to be found at the time all this was going on, and Yahweh tells us not to listen to hearsay evidence, and it's totally hearsay, but since Paul said it to Luke, Luke wrote it down, and I just want to quote this from Acts 26:14. With what he says is, and we fell down to the ground, and I heard a voice saying to me in Hebrew dialect, Sheol, Sheol, for what reason are you pursuing me? It is difficult for you to kick against the goad. A goad's a sharp-pointed object, stick, you know, that they use to prod animals and control them, you know, or a poisonous stinger from a scorpion. That's what a goad is. And what I'd like to point out, it's obviously hard to kick against a sharp-pointed stick. Makes absolutely no sense for the Messiah Yahusha to say that in this or really any other context. But the phrase is first cited in line 790 of Euripides, the famous play, the Bacchae, which was written for the Dionysi, you know, a fertility and resurrection festival that was held each spring in 405 BC under the shadow of the Dionysus Great Temple in Athens. You know, it was considered to be one of the most important triests on the Dionysian mythology. The story opens with the return of Dionysus, who after a long absence was disassociated from his father Zeus. And that's exactly what he says. He talks about kicking against the goad. Now, can you imagine Yahusha quoting the Greek fertility goddess Dionysus?
No. No, I can't.
Can you imagine being stupid enough to believe anyone who told you he did? Because apparently this is what Paul is saying. And he was apparently pretty well read when it came to Dionysus, because that's what he seems to develop in his imagination, why he develops this new religion.
It was
based in bathing in blood, I guess.
It was a really bold move. Stupid, but bold.
I just think most people were illiterate back then, so they weren't aware of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there probably weren't a lot of people, you know, transcribing things that people said. They heard things by word of mouth. One guy traveled to a village, and he'd say, oh, hey, this and this. And, yeah, I mean, Paul capitalized on that. Does he actually ever say Yahweh's name?
No. No, I don't think he does. What Paul really does is claim, you know, we're people that move into the covenant do so vis-a-vis the Torah. You know, they walk out of Babylon, they develop a relationship with Yahweh, they're walking towards Yahweh, they walk through the Moed Mikra, they use his name, they even bless in his name, they love his name, and they take part in his seventh day of rest, Shabbat.
So do you think he's going to talk to anybody that doesn't actually know his name and use his name?
No, of course not. No, he's not going to come out of the blue. I mean, he did introduce himself to Moshe, and he did the same with, you know, Abram and a few others, I'm sure. But
and
these
he
were
did
people
that,
who...
He did that by announcing his name, first and foremost. I am Yahweh, your Elohim.
They all called him Yahweh, every one of them.
Except for Paul? I mean, that nothing about Paul fits with everybody else that he used.
Well, you know, Paul claimed, you know, that he was preaching this gospel, you know, this gospel of gratia, and I guess he was. And he was basing it supposedly on the life of Yahusha. However, he never once quotes him. Not one time. Okay, we're back, and we were just going over, you know, the very concept of putting the words from a Greek fertility goddess in the mouth of Yahusha on the road to Damascus and the supposed conversion experience that Paul apparently told Luke about because he wrote about it. And, you know, when we're sitting down and we're listening to somebody who supposedly speaks for Yahweh, Yahweh gives us a number of things that we can look at. And one of the important ones, one I found very important, is in Dabarim. It just means words. Dabar means word. Dabarim means words. It's been corrupted to Deuteronomy, and this is 18:20. And this is what Yahweh says. He says, surely, however, the prophet who arrogantly rebels, showing no respects, exaggerates and is presumptuous, seething in their content while communicating a message in association with my name, my designation, my reputation, or my renown, that I have not entirely inspired and completely directed him to say, and who continually writes and speaks in the name and renown of other and different gods than what that prophet he himself will actually want is to die, bringing a complete end to his existence. So this suggests not only is this guy not a part of the covenant, but he's going to want to die. Can you imagine why anybody would want to die, Scott?
I can't, no. I can't.
Well, think about this. Imagine your consciousness, your soul, your nephesh, being in a place called Sheol forever in darkness with no hope.
Well, then you probably want to wish you were just non-existent.
Yeah, that's what he's saying here. That's exactly what he's saying. And because Yahweh said that, I want to go to a line, and this is off P46. It is extant. Extant means it's the oldest writing of Paul on the face of the planet that we know of. And here is what Paulos has to say in Galatians 1:3. Charis gratia. You and peace from God the Father of our upright one, Messiah Yahusha. So he does use his name, Yahusha. But he ties it right with who? Charis. Well, who were the Charis? That's the name of the three great graces known as the Charities. The English word charity is a transliteration of their name. These pagan goddesses of charm, splendor, and beauty were often depicted in mythology, celebrating nature and rejoicing over fertility rites. Collectively, they make four appearances in Homer's Iliad and three in the Odyssey. So, you know, I mean, he quoted clearly from a play about Dionysus on the road to Damascus, and now he's introducing us to the charis and the grace. Now, when you go to a church today, what do these preachers tell you you're saved by?
The grace of God.
There we go, the gratia. The graces were associated with the underworld. They were part of the Eleusinian mysteries. In fact, their naked form stands at the entrance of the Acropolis in Athens. There's naked Francescos of the charis in the homes of Pompeii in Italy. That means they transcended the Greek religion and highly influenced Roman society, and they were known as the gratia, or the graces. Now, when I hear people, instead of saying, you know, that it's the mercy of the Torah and the observation of the Torah that allows them membership into the covenant, and I hear another group of people saying over here, well, it's by God's grace, and they're quoting literally pagan underworld goddesses. And I just read one of the things that, you know, God doesn't expect you to take your soul and just roll a pair of dice and gamble on it. He's asking you to, he doesn't expect a lot out of me or you. I don't ask anybody to be like me. He's asking us to seriously consider his words. He's telling us how to get to him. And one of the ways to get to him is by not involving the names of pagan goddesses. You know, their symbols, their holidays, their names. Yet, you know, today the United States and Western Europe, actually most of the free world, celebrates what? Christmas, Easter. They have pagan crosses all over buildings. They worship a Lord on Sunday. And even the ones who do it on the proper day still have their cross, still talk about grace, don't they?
Oh, yeah. They do their Lent thing. I know, because every time I go get lunch on Fridays, everybody's serving fish now. I don't know what that's about.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, these are just things that we're to look at. You know, at the end of their religious veneration, they pay homage to Amun-Ra. There was a word, Amun, not Amen, and it wasn't capitalized, Amen. That was what happened. There were seven placeholders. The placeholders were because these were concepts and names that weren't to be in titles, that weren't to be changed, like Messiah, like Yahusha, like Yahweh, like the upright pillar or the upright pole, like the Kodesh, the Ruach Kodesh. Kodesh, the set-apart spirit, or spirit set-apart. Well, they took every one of them and they changed them. As a matter of fact, they took Yahusha and they changed it to Hesus, who was the Druid Savior. They took Yahusha, Yahweh, and changed him. They actually threw his name out of his own words, a name which he says is very important. It's the name above all, Yahweh. And they replaced that with moniker, with Baal's moniker, which was what? Lord. And, they took the upright pole, that became the pagan cross, and on it goes. Now, you know, we should want to know, if we're really seeking out the truth, how this happened to us, right? I mean, there's billions of people that believe, and of course, Yahusha talked about the wide and popular path, didn't he?
Yeah.
And the narrow path that few people find.
Yeah, I was going to say, he said the wide and popular one is not the one you're supposed to be on.
Right. Marcion, what happened? The way the concept of a New Testament even came about, there was a Gnostic named Marcion. He was a wealthy shipbuilder and the son of a bishop. He took Paul's letters and he put them in a book. He was anti-Semitic. He hated the Jews. He actually declared the Jewish God dead, put Paul's letters and some writings from Luke to back up Paul's letters, although Luke was just Paul's historian, put them in a book, and that was the first New Testament. Matter of fact, he said that the old Jewish God was nasty and he was dead, and this is the new way. Now, can you imagine somebody writing a bunch of letters and putting them in a book and then telling you that God's dead?
Why would you follow? Why would you even care about a God that can die?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the people, first of all, the people were so ignorant. They just believed it. He pumped the area, had his prolific copy editors just dump loads and loads of Paul's writings in an area, put them in a book, and that was the first New Testament. And that's fact. As a matter of fact, he said that Paul was the only true apostle capable of sharing the words of the Messiah. That's what he said. And that's strange because he wasn't with him. So the disciples, like Shimon, or better known as Peter, or Yohanan, or Matthew, these guys, they weren't capable of writing anything that was up to the standard that he wanted to put in his New Testament. But Paul, who was in opposition, he was. And that's how he invented the first New Testament. Now, over years, they brought in writings of the other disciples, and then they disavowed Marcion, but they kept his book. You know, and that was really the backbone of the new religion. Simple as that. And, you know, in Psalms, it says, those with divided loyalties, I hate and I am opposed to them. The Torah I love and have developed a close relationship with. You know, Dodd, better known as David today, did a lot of great things. You know, I mean, he's the guy that stood up to the monster.
Goliath.
Yeah. Stood up to him when, you know, everybody else was shaking in their boots, and he didn't even wear armor when he went out and killed him. You know, he's the guy that put together the materials to build the temple. He did all these great things. But, you know, when you read through Psalms, Dodd, he says, you know, all the things I've done in my life, they don't amount to anything. Now, picture your life or my life or, you know, against the things Dodd had done. You would have thought, wow, those are the things that put Dodd in such a great position with Yahweh. But it wasn't. It was his understanding of the Torah, the very Torah that allowed Yahusha to exist to fulfill the Moed Mikra, which is the lone path to the covenant. And that's according to Yahusha. It's according to the Messiah, the implement, the one who does the work of Yahweh. We're back for the final segment this hour. From the time that Marcion wrote his New Testament, and of course I'd like to point out that a testament is part of a last will and testament. It's passing on the goods of a dead man. So I really don't think that Yahweh called his words a testament. Over time, a bunch of religious men who were creating a religion based on the life and times of the Messiah, as opposed to, you know, sharing the Torah, which is the only life-giving document on the planet. They decided that they had to separate Yahusha from Yahweh. Now, Scott, how can you do that? I mean, what does Yahusha mean?
It means Yahweh saves. It means Yahweh saves. Yahusha means
right.
Yahweh saves. So that's one I do know.
No, of course you do. I mean, it's a combination of Yahweh and Yasha, which is the Paleo-Hebrew word for saves and salvation. So Yahweh is telling us what? He's the one doing the saving, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't Scott saving himself. It isn't Larry saving himself. And the reason that Scott and Larry don't save themselves is because we're not capable of it. I wouldn't know what to do. Would you?
No, not unless he tells us what to do, but yeah, you'd have no clue.
No, well, I mean, I have to rely on him, you see. I mean, the concept that faith, which is faith in the unknown, is somehow something that's going to, you know, provide salvation for anybody is kind of a joke. I mean, you ask the average person, what was it that Abraham had that God loved him so much? He says, he had faith.
Yeah.
Well, the truth is, faith in the unknown is not something that Abraham was a real level-headed guy. He had come to know Yahweh, and he had come to trust and rely on him.
I think what people do is they try and interchange faith and trust. They're not the same. They're not in good faith. People think that trust. You said it yourself. He began to rely and trust on Yahweh. He trusted him, and he knew him. He knew him. He got to know him, and he trusted him. That's all he did.
Yeah. And today, how do we get to know Yahweh? How do we get to know him?
Through the Torah.
Yeah, we can seriously consider his words. I mean, like we've been doing this first hour. We seriously considered that, hey, maybe we shouldn't be listening to a guy who's putting the names of pagan gods and goddesses in the mouth of the Creator. It might be not a good idea. And come to find out, it's a horrible idea, because he says that guy who claims to speak for me, and anybody who claims to speak for Yahweh is a prophet. He says that prophet's going to wish he was dead. That means he's not even going to get the benefit of dying. He's going to see the abyss.
Good for him.
Bad news.
Good for him. Good for him. He deserves it. He deserves everything he gets.
He's still billions.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of people in there that are looking at him because they know that it's going to be his fault that they're there.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be dying, and they're going to understand that the reason that they can't go on, because Yahweh does make a difference between those who actively deceive others and those that are just, you know, booty, that have just been deceived, you know, that were used along the way. He makes a distinction, and those people simply cease to exist. He says so. So, you know, the idea of love me or burn in hell, that's another monstrous, it would really take a monster god to do that. It'd be like me saying, hey, Scott, you know, let's get together and have dinner tonight. And by the way, if you don't do that, I'm going to come over and I'm going to burn your house down. Now, what time do you want to go to dinner? I doubt when, if you'd be interested in dinner. You might be loading up your gun and saying, bring it, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, or I just say, what time do you want me to come over? I mean,
yeah. Well, can you imagine? I mean, this is a monster deity, you know. Well, he's more confused than a box of Skittles.